David Mamet's play Glengarry Glen Ross, you're either a winner in a dog-eat-dog world or you're cactus. Hello, I'm Fiona Gruber, and to find out why a group of Chicago real estate agents altered the face of Western theatre, I caught up in London with the veteran English theatre critic Michael Coveney. He's covered Mamet's entire career from the late 70s and explains why this play was hailed both as a game-changer and as an instant classic.
The thing about Glengarry Glen Ross is that it's like an autopsy on the American Dream. I think the American Dream was sort of famously delineated in drama by Arthur Miller in Death of a Salesman. And I've always thought that David Mamet was the aftermath of that, picking up the pieces and looking at it in a very jaundiced, cynical, backward-looking way. And this is what happened when the whole thing about capitalism became about what we used to call here the creation of wealth in the 80s and 90s, and about the life of materialism, you know, as it entered its final stages. And Glengarry Glen Ross, which is a fantastic piece of ensemble theatre, seems to sum it up in a way that no other American play does. I've always thought American dramatists divide very much into spiritual documentary writers like Arthur Miller and poets like Tennessee Williams and Sam Shepard. But Mamet goes right down the middle here. He's very much a successor to Miller, but he's also more of a poet. There's something poetic about the way he portrays these sad sack losers. And in these two early plays, American Buffalo and Glengarry Glen Ross, which I think are both masterpieces, that is what he does.
How did it come about that the first production was in London at the National rather than in Chicago or New York?
It's quite interesting, isn't it, that the first production was in the National Theatre in 1983, directed by Bill Bryden, who had done the first production of American Buffalo here a few years previously. And what had happened, I think, in the interim, Mamet had become friendly with Harold Pinter. They'd met and they were friends. And Harold Pinter tells the story. He told it to John Lahr, the American critic, that Mamet had sent him this play with the covering note, "I think there's something wrong with this play. Can you tell me?" And Harold Pinter wrote back to him. He said, "There is nothing wrong with this play. I'm going to give it to the National Theatre," because Harold Pinter was an associate director for Peter Hall at the National Theatre. And Bill Bryden, who'd started his own company within the National Theatre, had a group of actors. And these actors fell on this play like red meat. You know, they were a very macho, rather sort of hard-drinking, hard-swearing, hard-living company anyway, to start with, quite unusual in the British theatre, who were all satelliting around Bill Bryden. And they put this play on, and it was absolutely magnificent. It was an extraordinary evening, and I always remember this. People in the grey suits, the fantastic shock at the beginning of the second act with the destroyed office, and then these scenes of bartering and desperation between the characters.
He's got an amazing ear for just sort of everyday language, the language of competitive males sparring off against each other, talking over each other, not finishing sentences. I mean, when you read it on the page, you have to read it again because it's so stop-start and so full of catchphrases. Is that the Chicago that Mamet grew up in that he's capturing here?
I think the Chicago Argo, the Argo Chicago of Mamet, is absolutely what he knows. He's got this fantastic ear, and as you say, he creates a kind of idiomatic swing and rhythm. It's the most fantastic thing. The first time I heard it in the theatre, and I'm not being clever with hindsight, I said it at the time. It said this must be what it was like to hear Pinter and Beckett for the first time. It is like jazz. It's a music, and it's got a wonderful clatter of male bonding and unbonding and competitiveness.
American masculine competitiveness. There's more of the jungle there. There are only winners and losers. And of course, the play opens with the ultimate loser, Levine, trying to claw his way back into a winning position by getting some leads to sell some property.
Yes. It's fantastic because the whole impetus of the play comes from Mamet's own experience of selling what he called useless land in Arizona to elderly people with money they didn't know what they were spending. So it's based on the experience, but he does create this thing of competitiveness in a capitalist market. I suppose in Pinter it's more an emotional territory. If you look at something like The Homecoming or the birthday party. But this is to do with the business world, and you're watching the detritus of capitalism as these poor sad sack losers are organising their strategies and their ploys. I love this thing about Mamet, that he's a poker player, that this thing about the bluff and the double bluff, which is through all his plays. And he's the only American dramatist who's equally at home in the cinema, in the great movies, as he is in the theatre.
And he really believes the writer is king, doesn't he? And he doesn't give much. He doesn't give many stage directions, does he, either? I mean, there's virtually nothing. It's words on a page. The actors and the directors got to work it out themselves, haven't they?
They are like musical scores. I mean, it's written like that, so it isn't fluffed up, as you say, with stage directions. He's not giving directions as to how anyone should say something. He doesn't even do what some modern dramatists do, Carol Churchill. You know, you have to overlap dialogue and you must do this. And it's just brutal on the page. And I think, you know, most productions, I mean, you very rarely see a completely poor production unless it's badly cast, because he gives the actors the rhythm of what they have to do.
How does Mamet fit in as a maker of compelling theatre? Because he talks about protagonists and, you know, the whole point of theatre is that you've got to have someone who wants something and whether they get it or not. Is he a great writer of drama as well as of language and emotional tension?
I think Mamet's the great master of bluff, counter-bluff, strategy, emotional blackmail, and all sorts of things that pertain to the way we live our lives in a post-capitalist society, or if it's still a capitalist society. And he's the kind of poet of it, you know. And it's very rare in the theatre that you feel that a writer is just taking the whole language of theatre on to the next stage. And I think with Mamet, you did feel that. You do feel that, looking back, that there was Beckett, there was Pinter, then there was Mamet. And it's interesting that he straddles that European quality of language, of doing something with language, and combines it with the best American traditions of someone like Arthur Miller. Mamet actually created a language, an argo, an idiom, and gave voice to a whole substrata of American life in the corporate world, in the capitalist world. And it's a huge thing that he did, you know. And all the plays that subsequently aren't necessarily about that are coloured by that invention, that innovation.
Michael Coveney, thanks very much indeed.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
And Melbourne Theatre Company's production of Glengarry Glen Ross is on at Southbank Theatre, The Summoner, between July the 5th and August the 9th. You can book online at mtc.com.au or by phoning 03 86 88 0800.